On June 17, 1972, several burglars were arrested at the office of the Democratic National Committee in the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C. In the following days, it was revealed that one of the intruders had connections to President Richard Nixon. What followed were months of investigations that ultimately led to Nixon's resignation.
In the 45 years since the scandal broke, it's become one of the most singular historic events in the country. The news catapulted two journalists to fame and led a president to ruin. But since the story broke that morning, a lot has changed and some myths have grown up in the media about the scandal.
W. Joseph Campbell joins us now. He's a professor in the School of Communication at American University and the author of several books, including Getting It Wrong, Debunking the Greatest Myths in American Journalism, and he's a former journalist. Joe, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Veronica. Thank you for having me back on your show.
Well, as we said, back on June 17th, 1972, 45 years ago, five men were apprehended breaking into the Democratic National Committee headquarters at the Watergate Hotel. How big a story was this at the time?
You know, it did make the front pages of some newspapers, including the Washington Post, but it wasn't a major national story. It wasn't a story that immediately touched off suspicions of widespread scandal in the Nixon administration. It was a story that was slow to percolate, slow to boil.
And how did the news begin to unspool and deepen in those first early days?
It began really as a police beat story, and the first report that the Washington Post published was under the byline of one of its police beat reporters, and it was through the police investigation, the D.C. police in the Capitol, where the unspooling of this scandal began. Some of the first linkages between the White House and the burglary were made at that very fundamental level, if you will, of law enforcement. And it was a couple of days afterwards when Woodward and Bernstein of the Washington Post had their first joint byline story together, in which they linked one of the burglars. Identified him as a security consultant to the Nixon reelection campaign, which was a strong tie to Nixon and his reelection.
What would you call the moment when, and maybe it's that moment, when it became clear that what the story was really the tip of the iceberg, the break-in and that first connection, and that this was something that was going to be a much bigger, all-consuming political story?
It probably wasn't until significantly later, and I'm almost tempted to say it wasn't until the summer of 1973 when it really became clear that this was a story of unprecedented dimensions, both in political terms and in terms of a constitutional crisis. And that was the summer of the Watergate hearings, when the Senate Select Committee began to take testimony from people related to Nixon's administration, his reelection campaign, and began closing in, if you will, on the White House. It was then when the existence of Nixon's tapes, his secretly recorded audio tapes, tapes that he made of most of his conversations inside the White House, were disclosed. At least the existence was disclosed of those tapes. That really pivoted Watergate. That really pivoted the scandal to a chase for the tapes, because those tapes could, one way or another, determine the guilt or innocence of Nixon and his men. And in the end, they showed quite clearly that Nixon, within days after the break-in in June of 1972, had obstructed justice by ordering one of his aides to seek to divert the FBI's investigation into the Watergate burglary. And that was clearly a case of obstruction of justice. It was the so-called smoking gun tape that, when it was disclosed, when it was released finally in July and August of 1974, made very clear that Nixon would have to resign the presidency.
Now, you used the word unprecedented before. What was it about this political story that made it unlike anything that had come before it?
It was the first time the scandal culminated in Richard Nixon's resignation, which was the first time a sitting U.S. president had ever been turned from office. He had to resign in the face of certain impeachment and conviction by Congress. And that alone is unprecedented, and that alone makes it a scandal without parallel. It was also the country's gravest political crisis and the gravest constitutional crisis of the 20th century. And that also, it makes this an exceptional moment in American history, exceptionally dark moment, if you will.
What was at the crux of those issues about politics and the Constitution? What were the questions that Americans and lawmakers were forced to confront then?
Just how close or how much evidence could we demand from the White House, from the executive branch? And Nixon was trying to resist many of the calls for him to release the tapes, to release transcripts of the tapes. He tried to satisfy those demands by partially releasing transcripts and portions of the tapes, but the demands for greater access to what the president had said and what he knew really was became kind of an unprecedented tug of war between the three branches of government. And finally, the Supreme Court resolved it by saying, you have to turn over that evidence, you have to turn over those tapes. And as I say, when he did, in the summer of 1974, his resignation, his departure from the White House became inevitable. But that was one example of the tug of war between the legislative, judicial, and executive branches of government.
We're talking with W. Joseph Campbell right now about the 45th anniversary of the Watergate scandal, which was on June 17th, 1942. W. Joseph Campbell is a 1972 rather. He's a professor in the School of Communication at American University in Washington, D.C. And Joe, what was the political atmosphere like at the time? Can you paint us a picture?
I'll try. In 1972, in the summer of 72, Richard Nixon was running for re-election, and his Democratic opponent was George McGovern. Nixon had, according to the polls at the time, a huge lead over McGovern, and McGovern was trying all kinds of efforts to catch up, to try to narrow the gap between he and Richard Nixon. But inevitably, that gap kept getting wider and wider because Nixon was making efforts to draw down U.S. forces in Vietnam. The war in Vietnam was still going on, but it was on a lower simmer than it had been 4 or 5 years earlier. Nixon's also attempted to present himself as a statesman, sort of above the political fray. There was an arms control agreement that was in the works with the Soviet Union at the time. So Richard Nixon was playing the international card, as well as the domestic card, to try to elevate himself above the political fray. And quite clearly, he had all the advantage of incumbency. And McGovern's campaign was a pretty shaky one. He had to replace his vice presidential candidate midstream. It was a really poorly run campaign, and he tried. McGovern tried on a number of occasions to call attention to the slowly emerging Watergate scandal, but without a whole lot of traction, without a whole lot of success. And in the end, Nixon won a huge landslide, a 49 state landslide. Re-election victory, and the political climate of the time was one of Nixon's inevitable re-election. And it's interesting looking back how Watergate really did not figure much in the campaign. It sort of got overwhelmed by the campaign coverage of the time. It was not a dominant or central issue of the 72 campaign.
By a lot of accounts, the politics were polarized at the time. Do you think that had something to do with both the election and the Watergate story getting buried, and also the very existence of that story, the fact that that was something that happened in American politics?
A lot of people had trouble believing, Veronica, whether that this was a scandal that would reach the White House or would be something that would have involved the president. It was characterized by Nixon's spokesman as a third-rate burglary. And at first, many people just thought it was. It was bizarre. And how was this going to eventually sweep up the president and his top aides, which it eventually did? But back in the summer and fall of 72, it was hard to see how that was going to be an outcome. And as I said, George McGovern, the Democratic candidate for president, was trying his darndest to try to make this an issue, but it just received almost no traction whatsoever. And it was it's hard to believe now, thinking back, that Watergate, would that scandal, as important as it was in American history, did not have much of an effect on the election. And it was not as tense or demanding or as riven. The country wasn't as riven in 1972 as it had been just 4 years earlier, in 1968. I mean, that was the year that almost gave America a nervous breakdown. But by 72, the war in Vietnam was being, the U.S. forces from Vietnam were being withdrawn, and the war was not as pressing of an issue as it had been 4 years earlier, when Nixon narrowly won election over Hubert Humphrey.
W. Joseph Campbell is with us right now, and we're talking about the 45th anniversary of the Watergate scandal. He's a professor in the School of Communication at American University in Washington, D.C.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. If you were around when the Watergate scandal was unfolding, how did it shape your view of American politics or American journalism? Did it seem like a big story to you at first, or were you surprised how much it grew as it went on? If you weren't around at the time, how have you thought of the Watergate scandal? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue our conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. We're continuing our conversation about the 45th anniversary of the Watergate scandal with W. Joseph Campbell. He is a professor in the School of Communication at American University in Washington, D.C., and the author of the book, Getting It Wrong, Debunking the Greatest Myths in American Journalism.
You can join the conversation now at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on the Watergate scandal? What impact do you think it had on politics over the last 45 years? What questions do you have about what happened? Are there lessons today for the world of politics, the world of journalism? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You could also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Joe, I want to ask you before we get to our callers, we live in a time now where politics are very polarized. There's a lot of, the word rancor is used a lot to describe the sentiment between the two parties. Not a lot of bipartisan cooperation, a lot of cynicism to go along with all of that. Do you think some of that was birthed in the Watergate scandal?
I think it was, Veronica. I think it really does. Some of the rancor, some of the divisions in the country really do. Some of the suspicions about government and the federal government in particular, I think a lot of that can be traced back to Watergate, to the Watergate era. At least it was incipient back then and has developed over the years. The Clinton scandal of the 1990s was another moment in which partisan rancor really deepened in this country, and I think that had a lasting effect as well. So there's certainly something to be said for the effects of Watergate, the long-lasting effects of Watergate on the American political psyche.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Jim joining us first in Suamico. Jim, hi.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I just wanted to say that, you know, basically in 72, yes, the Vietnam War was winding down, but it wasn't wound down completely. I was over there, Gulf of Tonkin and some rivers, and basically the North had invaded the South, so that was still going on, even though it wasn't a primary situation because the draft was pretty well wound down. But the other comment I'd like to make is that the journalism reporting back then was not quite as biased as I see it today, where you can turn from Fox News and get one side it consistently, and you turn to MSNBC and you get, or CNN or other channels and get primarily the other side, and that's all it is.
Jim, thanks a lot for sharing those points there. And Joe, he's making the point that the war had not quite wound down to the extent maybe that we think it had. But also, let's get at that last point that he thinks the state of journalism was different back then, that it took a more holistic approach and it wasn't as splintered. What do you think?
Well, it certainly wasn't as splintered. There were fewer platforms. There were, three major networks, and they were guided by what was then called the Fairness Doctrine, which really was a way to enforce fairness on the national news networks. And so the Fairness Doctrine really kept broadcasters, ABC, CBS, NBC, from taking decided points of view, from editorializing a lot on television, and so that was certainly true. And then the cable networks that we know today were not even in anyone's imagination back in 1972. And I think a case can be made, although it's probably anecdotal rather than a detailed content analysis, that, yeah, it was probably less partisan, less riven, less consumed by controversies related to bias than it is today. Plus, social media, which is a real kindler of complaints against the mainstream news media, that was certainly not around in the early 70s either.
In some lights, this was seen as kind of a golden age of journalism, largely due to Woodward and Bernstein, who are lionized. And you say in some senses maybe we went too far in according them too much credit for cracking this case. Do you want to do a little myth-busting there about what their role was?
Gladly, yes. The dominant narrative of Watergate over the years, over the 45 years, has become the notion that Woodward and Bernstein, through their dogged reporting of the scandal and with the help of a super secret source named Deep Throat, codenamed Deep Throat, effectively uncovered the crimes that forced Richard Nixon to resign the office of president. It's a nice, neat and tidy tale. It's a media-centric tale, so journalists tend to like this tale. But it really is not how Watergate was uncovered, and it was not how Watergate wound up. This has become a simplistic tale that is easily remembered, and it just erases almost all the details and almost all the complexities of Watergate, which, after all, was a scandal of crime, deceit, secret tapes, cover-ups. There was a lot going on in Watergate. It was a multidimensional, sprawling scandal, and many of the details and many of the names of the players have been forgotten over the 45 years. It's inevitable. History kind of works that way. You just kind of forget who did what and when. And in its place is this dominant narrative, this very straightforward, simplistic, media-centric narrative that Woodward and Bernstein brought down Nixon's corrupt presidency. And it's a way to grasp the essence of Watergate, if you will, that Nixon had to resign because of his misconduct, but it does not do justice to the many players and actors and forces and agencies that really had the central role of uncovering this scandal. And I'm thinking here of the FBI, federal prosecutors, special prosecutors, bipartisan panels of both houses of Congress, and ultimately the Supreme Court, which forced Nixon to turn over the incriminating tapes, the tapes that proved he was knee-deep or neck-deep in a cover-up of this crime. So the dominant narrative, the Woodward-Bernstein brought down Nixon narrative, is appealing, but it's inaccurate. And even the Washington Post, principals at the Washington Post over the years have dismissed this as the way Watergate was uncovered and unfolded.
You mentioned earlier that you saw this as a tug of war between the three branches of government that's played out over the course of this scandal. Do you ever do a little, you know, what the novelists do and think what would have happened if a certain branch would have caved or would have tugged and won that tug of war? Are there alternate endings
to Watergate?
Yeah, do you
think there would have been an alternate ending had there not been the audio tapes? Had Nixon not secretly tape recorded many of his conversations in the Oval Office and elsewhere in the White House, without those tapes, Richard Nixon probably escapes Watergate. He escapes as a wounded president, but he escapes and serves out his term. And so I think the tapes were really central, really decisive in terms of Richard Nixon's guilt or innocence, demonstrating that. And it really took that kind of certain evidence to make it very clear that he did commit high crimes and misdemeanors to be forced from office, because otherwise the evidence just wasn't there. It wasn't going to turn up in a convincing and compelling way. And so the tapes were were essential to the outcome of Watergate.
In our last moments here, just a little bit of time left, are there lessons for how we should be covering a potential presidential law breaking today?
Well, I think persistence certainly is the key, and I think we've been seeing a lot of persistent reporting about President Trump and his the suspicions about his collusion with Russia. But at the same time, I think we need to have more evidence than we've seen so far. I don't see there's much evidence, concrete evidence, that links Trump or his campaign to collusion that had the effect of swinging the election his way. So far, that evidence, in my view, hasn't materialized. And I think to unseat a sitting president, one of the lessons of Watergate is that we really do have to have that persuasive, compelling, clear-cut evidence of misdemeanor or high crimes.
Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Veronica, it's been my pleasure.
W. Joseph Campbell is a professor in the School of Communications at American University and the author of several books, including Getting It Wrong, 10 of the Greatest Misreported Stories in American Journalism, joining us today to talk about the 45th anniversary of the Watergate scandal and some of the myths surrounding it.